over. Kind of. A little bit.
Sort of. Yeah, you know, kind of. Maybe.
We're going to talk about it. We're going to get deep dive into it. But yes, what was it? 116 days? Something like that?
118 days, I think. 118. Ooh. The longest actors' strike ever. Like, yeah. Woo! And for all together, directors, writers, actors, like 7 months. Right. I just, can you even imagine? We haven't been able to do anything for 7 months, y'all. Like, but we're back, and you're going to be hearing all about that too. Not just everything, but we're back. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, man. I mean, half the year, basically, a little over half the year gone. Rightfully so, though. Finally got to some points of agreement that everybody feels comfortable with. So that's awesome. But man, oh man, we're going to deep dive into all the nitty gritty details in the show, but let's get a little crazy. Hello, everyone. So you want to start a podcast but have no idea where to start? Well, Crazy Ant Media is here to help you. We want to assist you finding your VFE. What's VFE, you ask? Well, that is your voice, your format, and your equipment. These are the three biggest essentials you need to start your podcast. All those hours watching nonstop YouTube videos or all those random website links, those are done. Just hop on a Zoom call with us and we'll talk about everything you need to know to create your own podcast and find your voice. Plus, we will send you home with a 12-page packet over everything we just discussed. It's very in-depth. It is definitely a must-need while trying to start your first podcast. Contact us at info@crazyantmedia.com today so that you can start finding your podcast voice for tomorrow.
What's up, guys? Oh my goodness. Episode 241 of ItCaf Podcast. Be sure to follow us anywhere and everywhere on social media. And you guys know your host with the most, myself, J-Lo Fantastic, and the one and only Mal.
What's up? You seemed a little confused there for a second. Are you sure?
Just a little bit. I mean, you know, you gotta think about things.
In the cup? What's in the cup, man?
I mean, you know, it's maybe a little Irish coffee.
Oh, Irish coffee. That's right. That's right. It's Veterans Day, but we can still do some Irish coffee, right? I mean, come on.
Exactly. And of course, before deep diving into this jam-packed show, Please be sure to leave a rating on this podcast, comment below, and tell us what you actually think about ItCaf Podcast. Because if you didn't know, leaving a rating on the podcast and on the video helps this podcast get seen by more people who enjoy entertainment news, but more importantly, those who are breaking into the entertainment industry.
Facts.
We are the one-stop shop of everything going down in Hollywood because we're talking about it, man. It is freaking amazing.
Yes.
I love every second of it. It's so freaking great. And before we jump right into all the SAG-AFTRA stuff, be sure to head over to our website, www.crazyantmedia.com, where you can start rocking the latest and greatest Crazy Ant Media gear. We have the shirts. We have the hats. We now do have the Thanksgiving merch out right now. And I did design one design in particular so that Dustin will wear that design. And I'm sure if you go and look at it, you'll know exactly which one I'm talking about. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I think I may know which one you're talking about. Yes. Yes.
One that references wine. Let's be honest.
I mean, anybody
wine
who knows me kind of knows that that's the one. That is the one. I mean, you have Thanksgiving without wine, and what else to be thankful for? I mean, it's all a part of it, man. Oh,
exactly.
My goodness. Hey, before we dive in, also, we want to give a huge shout out on this recording day. It is Veterans Day, even though we will celebrate it on Monday, but this is actual Veterans Day. So a huge shout out to all the men and women who serve and have served in our country, and especially those who made the ultimate sacrifice and their lives to protect this country and defend its freedom. Have many veterans in my family, and I want to give a huge shout out to them. And I'm sporting and America's team. I know, but I'm sporting my red, white, and blue. I see you got your USA hat on. So huge shout out to everybody and all of them. We greatly appreciate you. Thank you all for serving and everything that you do. And you guys are amazing. And we wouldn't have this country without you.
It's true. It's true. Somebody's got to be crazy enough to protect us.
Yes.
But, yes. You know, it is an amazing thing. It really is. But let's deep dive into this, because I know everybody's been wondering. We've been talking about it for about 7 months now, about one strike or another. So we're finally through with everything.
With all
kind of
them.
Well, SAG-AFTRA did reach a tentative agreement at the beginning of this week, and the SAG-AFTRA National Board approved its new contract with the major studios with an 86% approval rating, now sending it to membership for ratification. The official approval was announced by the Guild at a press conference Friday afternoon, which finally got started at around like 3:20 p.m. After a 80-minute delay, though, everybody was like, what's going on? But SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher, National Executive Director Duncan Crabtree Ireland, and members of the union's contract negotiating committee were present at the union headquarters to announce the terms. Now, the full details of the contract will be distributed on Monday. An 80-page summary of the full agreement, which has not been made public yet, will go to the eligible members of the Guild November 13th. Now, ratification voting on the agreement starts November 14th, just around the corner, and will include member meetings to go over the terms of the deal. Yep. Now, the ratification vote will conclude on December 5th. The union membership has to approve the contract by a majority vote. Everybody has to keep that in mind. Now, the tentative agreement reached on Wednesday put an end to the union's 118-day strike, yep, the longest actor strike in Hollywood history. Now, the actors were allowed to return back to work on Thursday, and I'm sure everybody has seen on social media, everybody is flooding with promotion of their projects, yes, which is great to see, because I have missed it, man. I really have.
Oh, me too. It was so good to see them. They're like, oh my gosh, this show's already been on for, you know, 2.5 weeks now, 3 weeks, but I'm right, gonna promote the shit out of it now, kind of a thing. Yeah, guys and gals, the most important word in all of that is tentative, because it is not a done deal yet. While they are allowed to go back to work and promote and do things, as Logan said, it has to be voted on by the entire membership and has to have a majority vote yes in order to be ratified and actually signed into an agreement. Now, if they don't do that, they would likely vote to authorize to go back on strike again if they can't get a majority vote to say yes to this contract. Now, from everything that we're hearing, it seems like it is going to get a majority vote and it will be signed and we'll be good to go for 3 years. That said, we know a lot of people that are not happy with it. And our feeds are filled with a lot of people that are already coming at it negatively, saying they're not going to vote yes for it. And the biggest thing was AI. And we're going to talk about that, because we're going to dive into what they got, what they didn't get, what we know and what we don't know. But it's not a done deal yet. So we want to emphasize that. It is not done until December 5th and that vote concludes and they pass it with a majority. Fingers crossed, but anyway, there are some people that are still not happy. So, speaking of that, what did they actually get in the new agreement? All right, here's a little bit of a breakdown of everything that we do know. As we said, only an 80-page summary was drawn up so far, and even that wasn't released publicly yet. And when the full details come out, we're not going to see that either. That's going to be only for the members to be able to look at and vote on. So, but we may have some insiders that gave us a little information. Yes. So here's what we do know. Now, the agreement includes an unprecedented wage pattern with 2 wage increases in the first year of the 3-year contract. Yeah, woo! Balloons for that one, baby! the 7% upon ratification, meaning if they get through it all, December 5th, they will see a 7% increase in wages. And another 4% effective July 24th, making a compound first year increase of 11.28%. There will be another 3.5% increase effective July of 2025. This package breaks the so-called industry pattern. Now, wages for background actors will increase by 11% effective November 12th, 2023, and then by additional 4% effective July 1st, 2024, and by another 3.5% effective July 1st of 2025. And in a monumental breakthrough, for the first time ever, the number of covered positions in the West Coast zones will equal those of the East Coast zones. This is projected to add almost 11,000 new covered background workers daily, annually. So that's pretty awesome. That's good. That's not quite where they wanted it, but still a significant raise in money.
It's true. And I mean, that's been, you know, one of the biggest things, especially with all the streaming juggernauts being successful or unsuccessful. We really don't know because we haven't really got a lot of numbers. But the union achieved the creation of a new compensation stream for performers working in streaming.
There you go.
It provides a substantial bonus on top of existing residual structures, making work in streaming more sustainable for middle-class actors. The majority of that compensation will be paid to the actors on programs meeting certain viewership requirements. The remaining money will be distributed to other actors working on those streaming platforms through a new jointly trusted distribution fund. Now, this ensures improved compensation and sustainability for a wider range of actors contributing to the success of those platforms. Now, the agreement also adds fixed residuals for stunt coordinators working on television and new media productions. So that's good.
Oh, yeah, without doubt. Now, guys, that gets a little tricky with the bonuses for the top shows. They did kind of break that down, and I think we'll post that on social media for you guys to see, but it qualifies within, it's like if it's in the top 20% of overall subscribers who view it. It's a real tricky little scenario about how they get the bonus. So we'll post that in more detail maybe on social media instead of trying to break it all down here for you or whatever. And then that other fund that they're talking about, they wanted $100 million, they got $40 million. So not as much, but still, it's a way for everybody that does on streaming to get paid at least a little bit from the streaming because they weren't getting anything right now. So that's good. Another good thing is they got a nearly 43% increase to the contribution cap for 1 hour productions and nearly 67% increase to the cap for half hour productions that will result in increased contributions to the health and pension retirement funds, as well as help performers working on those shows to continue qualifying for the benefits. Because as you know, that was a big sticking point. The vast majority of the union members didn't even make enough money to qualify for the health benefits. So now these increases and the cap for their money on these shows will at least get them within range to keep qualifying. So that says to me secretly there's enough to get them above the $28,000 a year, maybe, if they're lucky enough to get on a streaming show. I don't know, but that's what it sounds like. So
yeah, and it's definitely helpful too, because if everybody remembers when SAG appointed Fran Drescher as the president against Gabrielle Cotaris, you know, when she first took over, healthcare was a big thing.
Huge.
So, I mean, to bring this back into the negotiations with the studios is very important. So I'm glad to see that as well. And the contract achieved important gains for hair and makeup equality as well. And the sharing of aggregated diversity statistics, eliminating inappropriate wigging and paint down gender neutral language, access to gender affirming care and translation services. It also provides more sexual harassment prevention protections for performers, including the use of intimacy coordinators in scenes involving nudity or simulated sex, or upon request, and additional safeguards for background. So that's also very important with everything we just went through with the Me Too movement. So that is good to see.
For sure. Now, did they not already have some protection in place for the wiggings and paint downs? I'm assuming that's like when they're painting makeup on naked performers, like Mystique, for example, in X-Men. Or the wiggings, I'm guessing, is like when they apply a some hair where maybe, yeah, you know what I mean? I'm guessing that's, I can't imagine just putting on a normal wig is an inappropriate wigging. I'm assuming they're talking about applying hair in other areas. I can't believe there wasn't already protections for that. Like, you know, you just having a makeup person just fly away at the body whenever that, well, that's good. I'm glad that that protection is in there now. That just seems like that should have been a no-brainer. I don't know. Also, meaningful protections for the casting process have been established, including provisions specifying that breakdowns, sides, and or scripts shall be provided no less than 48 hours prior to the submission deadline, excluding weekends and holidays. For all y'all that don't know what sides are either actual portions of the script or fake stuff created for people to audition with. That's what sides are. Now, this is increased to 72 hours for minors. Talent may not be asked to perform more than 8 industry standard pages for a first self-tape or 12 industry standard pages for a second subsequent callback. Man, 8 pages already seems like a lot. Are there studios having people audition with more than 8 pages? Fuck. That seems crazy. Additionally, if memorization is required, performers will be entitled to compensation. Wow. That's
interesting.
Yeah, that's new. And performers may not be requested to appear nude or while wearing attire more revealing than a bathing suit that could be worn at a public school. Producers must also provide opportunities to interview virtually or in person on a first-come, first-served basis with accommodations for performers with disabilities, senior performers, and minors. There's a whole lot of good all up in that. That sounds amazing. So that's really, yeah, really good
stuff.
Well,
I'm asking you, like, who's wearing a bathing suit at a public school?
Florida. I mean, there's swimming. I took swimming in school. Like, I went to, like, middle school and stuff in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and we did go swimming. And, I mean, some of the girls...
Well, it says public pool. I was just making fun of you butchering. It's fine. It's fine.
Well, public pool, like, you know, school pools.
You know, it's fine. It's fine.
Well, a school pool's a public school, is it not? Like, if you go to public school.
Yeah.
Right? Come on.
Yeah, yeah. It's fine. It's fine.
Irish coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And also improvements in relocation allowances for series performers were also made, covering $5,000 per month for up to 6 months with no cap on the number of seasons. Based on employment patterns, this amount to a 153% effective increase in relocation payments. So that's very interesting.
Oh, yeah, because remember, we had a lot of friends that were telling us this was a problem because a lot of these series shoot up in Vancouver and they would have to keep their home in LA or wherever they were living in the country and rent an apartment up in Vancouver for 6 months. And they were like, we're not getting paid enough money to maintain 2 residences and stuff. So a $5,000 per month increase for that seems really good. Yeah, I don't know if that's still enough for 2 in Vancouver and LA. I mean, $5,000 gets you like a bedroom in LA. But I mean, it is a significant increase. So that's good that they're addressing that anyway. And here we go. Additionally, the Guild announced guardrails against the use of artificial intelligence, though it allows AI to be used to create digital replicas if the actors are paid and give their permission. No balloons there. I don't want balloons there. They're worried about this because the wording apparently says that they might have to be forced to agree to give the permission within the contract, like by the studios. So this is one of the things where a lot of the members that say they are not going to vote to ratify this contract are fighting against. They want it to be where they can put a provision from the studios saying that, I mean, from SAG-AFTRA telling the studios that we have passed a new rule within our membership that we, if we give permission, then we're no longer allowed to be SAG. So they want something to protect to where the studios can't basically force them to give their consent. And that apparently the way the wording is, it's not in there. So I think that's still going to be the sticking point. But at least we're getting somewhere with that, that if they do recreate you, they will pay you and they won't do it without your consent. Now, whether they can force your consent or not, I don't know. I guess that's going to have to be. Justine Bateman thinks so. So Justine Bateman is all full in, and she's been going at this for months now, saying this is the big warning, this is the big thing, this is why we shouldn't do it. So, I mean, that's part of it that I think that we will be paying close attention to and following up on, because this, I don't think this is anything going away. I mean, obviously AI is not going anywhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, it makes complete sense because, I mean, it's just going to be an ongoing conversation, and it is going to be for 3 years, this agreement. So,
right.
I mean, there's always that conversation of, you know, continuing moving forward with artificial intelligence and continuing to see how we can make it work for us and how it works against us. So that's one of the biggest things. I know that's a big one that was holding us up at the very end. So it's one of those things. But now that SAG-AFTRA strike is over, allowing for the cameras to start rolling again, a lot of people have questions as to what it all means. So let us try to explain it all. First up, how long until film and TV shows get back up and running? Now that actors can go back to work, there is nonetheless prep time that comes with getting back to a project and getting it back up and running.
Yes.
Now, sets need to be built or rebuilt. Cast members, some of whom likely moved away during their lengthy production hiatus, now need to be recalled or replacements found. Schedules need to be ironed out as actors and artisans are these days often working on multiple projects at once. Then there's the issue of a studio space and what might be available. As for scripts, presumably many of them have been in the works already, either prior to the WGA strike or after that one was resolved last month. But if it shows opts to save money by block shooting, meaning it shoots every scene at a location for an entire series at once, they'll need to wait until all of those scripts are in. Now, broadcast series, which rely on fast-paced, shorter-length shoots in order to fulfill hefty episodic orders, are expected to be first up. That makes sense.
For sure.
In general, the first scripted shows to produce completed episodes with a multi-camera comedies, which are shot and edited quickly. Some series already have completed scripts and were just waiting for SAG-AFTRA to finally come to a deal so they can resume filming. Others were a little bit in the middle of the writing process and likely were able to complete those scripts by the time the actors were ready.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically family sitcoms.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that will probably come back first. But again, it all depends on who was working the most while these things were on hiatus.
Right. And so you guys know, so how long, right? Say they did have their scripts ready to go and the actors are now back or whatever. When will we start to see those programs that went back into production after the strike? Well, if you guys know, the rule of thumb is normally around 3 months for network TV series to be written, shot, and edited. You know that. They start in the summer, they premiere in September, right? July they start, August they go shooting, September, boom, the premieres all hit. So about 3 months. But according to insiders, this will all depend on when cameras actually start rolling. If the shows can get back into production by late this month or early December, a February date is still possible. For shows that wait until January to start filming, March will be more likely when they hit, which is odd because that's when normally reruns start to go in and season finales hit and we go into the summer break. So that's kind of weird that that would be when they're debuting is in March. Waiting until then, though, is necessary so that networks have several episodes in the can before moving forward. Because, of course, you don't want to drop a couple episodes and then take a long hiatus and burn out the momentum that's there already. You know, nobody wants that. And, of course, here's where it really gets complicated. The holidays are coming up, and the unions all mandate days off and time off during the holidays. As you guys know, we talk about it all the time. This is the time of year where Hollywood normally shuts down and everybody gets a break before ramping up during award season. So how is that going to play into? You're going to try to catch up on all these productions and film all these shows to get them out, but you got Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, all of which are mandated days off. So good luck. I don't even know. It's going to be complicated.
It really is. And I mean, everybody's been asking us. We've been getting all these direct messages on Twitter and all of these, you know, interaction with fans in person. How many episodes are going to be in their favorite TV shows? Well, even the broadcast networks have been moving away from the old standard of the 22 to 24 episodes per season, as the economics of the business have changed, as everyone knows, with the streaming.
Yep.
But nonetheless, that tally is still the norm for most of primetime's top rated dramas and comedies. Well, not this year.
No.
That networks are looking at different seasons between different episodic seasons between 10 and 13 episodes. Some shows might be ready to do more. The question is there whether the networks and studios want to spend extra production costs to actually do this. Right. So that's the big thing.
Yeah, because they've claimed they've lost so much money. So do they want to spend it to put 24 episodes or just be like, hey, we're good with 13? I mean, you know, it's just a give or take. It's all going to be all new. It's all new. And of course, like I just said, this is normally the time of year where you see everybody, all the biggies, all the contenders are out there hitting the theaters and they're on the and pushing for the campaign. So how will the end of the strike impact the award seasons? We've already known that a bunch of them have been pushed back. They had to change dates. They didn't know if they were going to air at all. Well, the Oscar campaign is about to undergo a major shakeup, y'all. Now that actors on films can actually hit the red carpets, do interviews with press, and go to their late night talk shows, the competition is about to ratchet up a notch, no doubt. Before now, only performers in films that had been given the waivers by SAG-AFTRA were allowed to discuss their projects. This also means that the directors, writers, producers, and artisans who had been pushed into the limelight to promote their projects will now have to step aside a bit as the stars can once again take the limelight. Now, it didn't take long. By 12:01 a.m. on Thursday morning, studios were already revising talent lists for upcoming premieres, adding actors to the roster. So far, only the WGA has moved its winter 2024 awards date, moving it to April 14th, my birthday, in order to extend its submissions window. Other award shows are holding on to their dates, at least for now. But with the resolution of the SAG-AFTRA strike, the shows are now aiming to secure hosts for the upcoming ceremonies. Now, that includes the Primetime Emmys, delayed from September and now scheduled to take place on January 15th. The original telecast of June 16th had to be canceled because of the labor dispute. Now, the awards show telecast that had been post the longest, the Daytime Emmys, they're actually now going to move forward and they've set their air date. That show will now air live on December 15th on CBS. So that's like right next month. They're like, shit, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Our shit's supposed to be months ago. So there you go. We're going to get one of them right out of the way in December. And then we're going to keep an eye on it because we know the Oscars are normally around February. Will that be pushed because of these other ones being pushed? So we're going to keep an eye on it. But that's what we know so far. Daytime Emmys next month. And most of these are going to try to hold on to their original dates. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I mean, you know, there's so many shows that people already wait, you know, 1 or 2 years before they even watch the next season or the Facts. Next season even comes out. So, I mean, here is a running list of the TV series that will be leading the way to return to production. We will be updating it each week on the podcast as new production dates are being set, including for series like Netflix's Stranger Things, Max's The Penguin, Welcome to Derry, and Hacks. And Paramount Network's, of course, Yellowstone, which are expected to start filming again very freaking soon.
Yes.
Now, all dates are tentative and subject to change, though. So always be sure to remember that. But for now, it looks like NBC/Warner Brothers TV's Night Court would be leading the way in post-strike production, restarting with a 11/15 targeted return to production.
So next week.
I mean, that's just a couple of days.
Yeah. Other series looking at tentative late November production starts, meaning going back before the cameras this month, y'all, with post-Thanksgiving, because as we just told you, their mandated holiday is off. We're looking at Abbott Elementary, The Rookie, Grey's Anatomy, Bob Hart's Abishola, Tracker, Young Sheldon, FBI, FBI International, FBI Most Wanted, The Equalizer, Blue Blood, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Med, Law & Order, Law & Order SVU, The Irrational, meaning going back into production because half their stuff's already airing. Quantum Leap, Pretty Little Liars, The Sandman, Apples Never Fall, and Chucky. So all of those expected to go back before the cameras before the end of this month is over. Don't freak out at me. I know I didn't say Law & Order, Criminal, Organized Crime. That's going to be a mid-season show. Remember? Remember? That's why it's not going right. Don't come at me. I didn't leave it off. All of Dick Wolf's shit is fine. Just saying.
It's fine. It's okay. It's fine. But I mean, shows expected to have an early December start are The Cleaning Lady, All-American, 911, Will Trent, NCIS, Ghost, CSI Vegas, The Neighborhood, Animal Control, Alert, Duster, Grownish, and Hysteria. And I mean, shows with later starts in January and February are The Lincoln Lawyer, Emily in Paris, Alien, and El Tole.
Yes, very good. Very well done. Very well done. Now, of course, the rescue mission to save Hollywood's 2024 calendar at the box office and the summer lineup in particular has also officially begun. One source is telling us that some major film productions are already up and running as of Thursday. I know which one they're talking about. That's Deadpool, because they were already back. They were ready to go back as soon as it ended.
Yeah.
Dozens of titles have already shifted their release dates because of the strike and the preceding writer's strike, which ended in late September, and more are certain to flow. Within hours of the deal being announced, for instance, Sony pushed back the release of Venom 3 from July 12th, 2024 to November 8th, 2024, in order to provide more cushion.
I mean, it just makes sense. I didn't even realize that Venom 3 was in development, production, all the things, because I'm really not that excited about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, it is what it is.
Totally.
Well, in recent weeks, as we've told you on our past few episodes, Disney delayed 2024 spring tentpoles like Snow White and Elo by a year or more, while Paramount pushed back the release of the next Mission Impossible installment for the summer of 2024 to 2025, and A Quiet Place Day One by several months from spring to June of 2024. Now, Sony has likewise made a slew of changes to its release lineup, and then there are some countless smaller and mid-range films from the major studios, mini majors, and independent outfits that must find their way home, man. They must do it. here are some key titles hanging in the balance. We got Ferocia by Warner Brothers. We, of course, the release date of that, May 24th of 2024. Twisters by Universal, release date of that is July 19th of 2024. Venom 3, of course, from Sony, release date is on November 8th of 2024. That previous release date was July 12th of 2024. Gladiator 2 by Paramount, release date is on November 24th of 2024. Wicked 1 and 2 from Universal release dates are November 27th of 2024 and then November 26th of 2025. And then, last but not least, the man himself, the myth, Tom Cruise. Mission Impossible 8, of course, from Paramount. His release date is May 23rd of 2025. That one was delayed a whole year.
Yeah.
But it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. And guys, now just because, like Logan said, those release dates, remember, those are hanging. Those aren't guaranteed. We're hoping that those all still hit on those dates, but we don't know. Maybe they're pushed. Maybe they're not. What we do know is that the Marvel slate got all kinds of pushed. It got all kinds of messed up. Yeah. And by the way, can we stop bashing the Marvels before I even jump into this? The reason it's having a bad box office is because we've spent the last year and a half slamming Marvel films and trying to make them trash. If nobody had done that, by the way, it's still going to be the number one movie in the weekend. That's a 16-year stretch where all 34 movies have opened at number one at the box office. So fuck off, all you haters. That's all I'm saying, all right? Now, after months of speculation amid the work stoppage caused by the recently ended SAG-AFTRA strike, Deadpool 3 is being delayed by the Walt Disney Company. But do not worry. The comic book threequel has vacated its May 3rd, 2024 release date, but is now set up to hit theaters still in 2024, July 26th of 2024. And guess what, guys? That's going to be the only Marvel movie we get all year in 2024. All year because of the strike.
I think that's going to be good, though. I think that'll give people a little like breathing room and then be able to come back to it.
I think so, too. And fuck, Loki. Can we even talk about Loki? Holy shit, that season finale on what?
Don't spoil anything.
I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just saying, man, that might be the best Marvel project I've ever seen. The writing, gosh, it's so good. All right, now, it's one of several movies, Deadpool I'm talking about, that Disney also announced on Thursday evening as the studio redoes the whole Marvel lineup. Deadpool 3 is now claiming the slot previously occupied by Captain America Brave New World, which has been pushed to February 14th of 2025. Now, I'm hearing that might be good news because apparently it had a couple of test screenings and did not go well. So there's going to be a whole lot of reshoots with that one, which they're not allowed to do because the actors are back. And hopefully maybe it needed it. So maybe that pushback's a good one. Additionally, Marvel's Thunderbolts has been moved from December 20th of 2024 to July 25th of 2025. And its upcoming Blade reboot has shifted from February 15th, 2025 to November 7th of 2025. Now, to be fair, it's not all Marvel movies. Disney has also delayed its upcoming prequel to the 2019 CGI remake of The Lion King, Mufasa the Lion King, directed, of course, by Barry Jenkins. That one is moved from July 5th, 2024 to December 20th of 2024. Additionally, the studio has vacated two other dates, July 25th, 2025 and November 7th, 2025, which it had planted flags on, but they didn't announce which films they were going to put on those dates. But they're not anymore. So there you guys go. We've given you shows to expect to return, shows maybe not. Movies that are expected to return, movies that you're going to have to wait for. And we kind of told you as much as we know of what they did get and what they didn't get in this new contract. Overall, for me, it sounds like they got a great deal of really good stuff in the contract. You can't get everything, right? That's what the next 3 years is going to be, right? You have to keep working and growing. But there was a lot of positive stuff that I... Am I worried about AI still? Sure I am. But there was a lot of positive stuff coming out of there that I think is going to go a long way in helping the acting community get better paid and better protected on things. I just think it's... I think it was a good contract. I think this is going to be good.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's obvious because, you know, last Friday was supposed to be the deadline and then they kept moving it. They wanted to finish this before the holiday season because basically, I mean, once Thanksgiving rolls around that's it. Like, I mean, all of December is kind of lackluster. I'm so happy that they were finally able to come to this agreement. Of course, we still have to get it passed. But it's one of those things where you don't want to pick back up negotiations after, you know, the holiday season.
Yeah.
It's way better to have it already set in stone, kind of, and then be able to actually get back to work in January. I think that's so important. I'm so excited about it too, because there's so many things that we're expecting. I mean, not only from us as a company and our films and our projects, but we're fans of so much stuff that kept getting delayed and so many things that kept getting thrown out the window, basically, because of all of these strikes. Like, not only did one of our favorite shows, Heels, get canceled majorly because the actors weren't able to, you know, promote their show.
Yeah.
But now I just saw that Kevin Feige's Star Wars film is no longer being done anywhere. So that sucks. And I mean, there's so many other projects that were been put on the back burner, like Fantastic Beasts, like we talked about the other week. And I mean, I'm happy that we're finally able to continue building in the entertainment industry. COVID hit us so freaking hard, and then the strikes hit us so freaking hard. I really want Hollywood to get back to what it's best at, putting out great original content and hopefully getting away from the fucking reboot.
Yes, yes. And like you said, wow, has it been a rough stretch for smaller companies like ourselves? I mean, we were trying to do our very first film and COVID hit. And we navigated COVID. We got our first film made. We had the red carpet premiere. We thought, all right, we're rocking and rolling. We lined up our actors. We were getting financing. We secured some locations. We're like, we're going to film our second one. Boom, the strikes hit. And 7 months later, now we're in that process. Like we told you at the top of the show, we've got to re-secure locations. We've got to re-get our actors back. We've got to re-get financing back. All of that kind of stuff. So even though we're good to go and like full steam, we have to start over basically on what we were trying to do 7 months ago. So it is a little kind of tricky, but I'm right there with you. I'm excited about I did see some good news on the cancellation side. Like you said, I did see apparently the Fantastic Four cast has been locked and they've been sitting on it because they haven't been allowed to say it. Makes sense. There are rumors that by the end of this coming week, we're going to hear the cast. They're going to announce the cast, which I think, yes, I want to know who my Fantastic Four is going to be. Because like you said, I'm tired of all the reboots and this will be a reboot, but I feel like it's going to be the first. We're just going to ignore all the rest of them. This will be the first Fantastic Four film, and I'm excited to see what it is. But woo! Yes, and stay tuned, guys, because we will start talking a whole lot about our projects and what we're going to be doing and the things that you guys know. We've got a whole bunch of stuff going on, numerous projects, all kinds of stages of development. We're in the process of finishing up our location down in New Orleans. We're so excited about all of it. We can't wait. And you know what else? Guess what? Well, maybe here or there, spit or spatter through the holidays, but guests will be back. Guests will be back on ItCaf. Like I said, they might be sporadic because we've got the holidays coming up and that's always a slow period, but we will finally have your favorite stars back on the show to talk about all the stuff. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited.
I really am too, man. I mean, there's so much that has been just put a damper on, but I feel like the light is at the end of the tunnel and I'm super excited for all these shows to come back. I'm excited for these movies. Can we just talk about it since we have a little bit more time? But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the Marvels. Oh. It was, of course, one of the, and the, I believe, like you said, shortest Marvel films. But I think it fulfilled everything it needed to. It didn't need to be 2.5-3 hours long. You know, I felt like it set up so much. And I felt like, you know, were there some things? No movie is really ever perfect. But yes, there were some things that you can nitpick on, not like that ruins the whole movie. But other than that, like really entertaining, really enjoyable. It got serious when it needed to get serious. It was funny when it needed to be funny. I thought it was that nice balance of, you know, that drama and comedy instead of getting away from, you know, the more comedy and less drama. Right. So I feel like the pendulum is beginning to go back to drama and a little bit of comedy because that's what makes Marvel great. That's what the storytelling has been so epic at. But we got a little bit away from that after Endgame. I'm going to be honest about it. We still enjoyed them. Of course, there are the nitpicking things. And of course, there are some things that are better than others. But at the end of the day, like, I feel like we are too hard on films. We are way too critical about these certain things. So it's just unfortunate. Let's get back to the very basics of being someone who enjoys films. Was it entertaining? Yeah. Did you like an aspect of it? Yeah. You know, I mean, you see all of these critics come out and like bash them, or Rotten Tomatoes or all these things, and they don't even mention anything they liked about it. Yeah. So, I just want to get back to talking about things that we like. The glass is always half full. Yes. We need to be more positive in our critiques. Of course, you can still critique it. You can still point out little things, But I just, the negativity, man, it is crazy.
It's awful. It's we are doing to specifically Marvel films, but all films in general, what we do with everything in this country. We build them up and put them on a pedestal as the greatest thing ever, only to rip the pedestal out and tear them down. And that's exactly what people did to Marvel. This is the greatest cinematic thing ever in the history of all time. It's you'll never beat it. It's always going to be this and that. And then when it was there and it was exalted and it was, we said, what? Now, and yep. Everything fucking sucks and it's the worst thing ever and this and this and this and it's formulaic and it's blah, 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 blah. We did that. We did that. We built them up. We tear them down. I hate when fucking people do that. This is a really good film. The Marvels is a really good film. I'm right there with you. It has the drama. It has the action. It has a little bit of comedy. There are consequences, right? I always feel like the Marvel films do a really good job when there are consequences. There's somebody whose life is at stake or the world is at stake. That is the case in this movie. They also do what they did best. While there's only one post-credit scene, there's two surprises, guys. There's two surprises. Towards the end of the movie, let me just say that we get the official, this team is coming. And I'm not going to tell you what I'm talking about, but we definitely know. I was surprised at who's starting the team, though. That is not right. Where I thought who was going to be the leader of the team by any means. But that team is coming, and then we get our post-credit scene, which sets up a whole different introduction of now we finally know. Now we finally know. So, yeah, super pumped. I really – go see it. Please go see it. You will not – I'm talking to non-Marvel fans. Go see it. It's a genuinely entertaining film, and I hope that everybody goes and sees it. That's not to say that you don't go see Oppenheimer, that you don't go see the dramas, that you don't go see the dialogue-driven films. I'm not only talking about Save the Tentpoles. See all film. We're talking about all film. We love cinema. We love movies. We love these people. And can we just keep this in mind? And I can't remember what guest of ours said this, but they talked about when they were young, they would do exactly what they'd see a movie and trash it. Oh my God, that was the worst fucking thing I've ever seen and blah, blah, blah. And then as they got older, they started remembering that people work hard on these films. If regardless of whether you like it, it wasn't your forte, it wasn't your thing. There were hundreds of people who put their whole life into that film and used all their talent and all their artistic ability to make that film. So when you trash it and say horrible things about it, you are putting that on those people who poured everything into making that film. And that's just not cool. You don't like it, you don't like it. Critique it. But to bash it, tear it apart, you know, rip it and just, it's just not cool. As creators, as filmmakers, I can tell you, come at me with your critique. Tell me what you don't like. But don't tear it down and call it a piece of trash or garbage or it shouldn't have been made or blah, blah, blah. Because until you strap on the boots and pick up the camera and make it, you can't say shit like that. That's all I'm saying. Until you get in the ring and brave enough to do it, don't tear down somebody's art. Critique it, but don't... I mean, that's just me. I just feel like you shouldn't be tearing down the hard work of all of these creative people just because you didn't like what they put out there.
Exactly. What was your audience like? Because mine actually geared more upper millennial. And it wasn't a big audience. There wasn't a lot of people in there. And I went to like a 720 show. So I was expecting it to be, you know, a decent amount of people.
Well, mine was interesting. So I didn't expect a massive audience because I went and it was in the biggest theater possible that this location has. But I went to the 415 show on a Thursday. Yeah. Most people are still in work. Most people, you know, so I wasn't expecting a massive turnout. But I was shocked because my audience primarily was of Indian culture, which clearly coming from the Miss Marvel aspect of it, which I thought was amazing. And it was older than me. I'm talking like mid 60s, like range with scattered people my age or younger, but it was primarily above 60 and of Indian culture. And I was like, this is amazing. That's really cool that they're coming to see this kick-ass movie. Now go tell your kids and your grandkids to come see it too. So, yeah, I was a little shocked by my audience. I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, wait a minute. What, are they in the wrong movie? Like, I was right. Kind of shocked. I was just like, not the cultural aspect, but the age. I was like, are they in the right movie? But right. They enjoyed it. I will say that I had about maybe 30 or 40 people in there out of a 300 plus seat thing, about 30 or 40 people. It got a round of applause. I mean, everybody cheered and applauded at the end. So it is a good movie. Go see it. It is a good movie.
That's it, man. That's it. Well, we're going to transition into our top five this week. And yes. This week it is top five favorite screenwriters. This was very interesting. And you may not even know who some of these people are because screenwriters don't necessarily get all the credit that they deserve.
Facts.
Let's be honest about it, even though they literally spawn the idea.
And yet, oddly enough, sorry, you will know the projects.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, exactly. I mean, that's how it works.
I mean, literally all of these screenwriters have made, like, cult classics, tentpoles. Like, it's one of those things. So, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. And hopefully, after you hear our list, you will go back and watch other films that these people have written. That would be absolutely amazing.
Sure.
But number five for me goes to Oliver Stone. Now, who? Everybody's like, Oliver Stone? Oliver Stone. The guy who wrote Platoon, Wall Street, JFK, and one of my favorites, Scarface. I mean, talk about the range right there.
Right?
I mean, shit.
Right?
I mean, political drama. Then you got freaking literal Wall Street. I haven't seen yet, but I know Dustin talks about religiously.
Yes.
Platoon, one of the best military films of all time. And then one of the best gangster films of all time, which is Scarface. Yeah, that range is absolutely wild. So, of course, I had to put that on my list because everybody knows Scarface is one of my all-time favorite films as well. So, yeah, man, Oliver Stone killing it, still rocking and rolling, too.
Yes, hell yes, hell yes. My number five, I'm trying to balance my list here. I'm trying to keep male-female ratio here. My number five, Nora Ephron. Don't recognize the name, but I guarantee you recognize the films. This is the woman behind When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle. Every Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks film in existence, she wrote. But did you also know that she did Michael? Remember the movie with John Travolta where he plays a fallen angel? Michael. She also wrote Julia and Julia, which just came out. It was about Julia Child and this food critic, Julie, with Amy Adams. Amazing. She's done a lot of stuff. Everybody, see, I feel like our whole lists are going to be, oh, you know that one. But they also did these, and it shows the ranges of these people. She isn't just romantic comedies. She also does these other things. And she's a brilliant writer who's been doing it for quite some time. If you go to IMDb, which we love, IMDb/IMDb Pro, you can check out the whole list of all the movies that these wonderful people have written. Because I think you're going to be surprised when you see the titles. And you're like, shit, that's one of my favorite movies. I didn't even know that's who wrote it. Exactly. So this is what we're doing the list for. Find out these amazing writers. My number five, Nora Ephron.
Nice, nice. Yeah, that's a good one, man. Yeah, a lot of different, I mean, films to think about right there, too.
I mean, the so orgasm many. Scene in When Harry Met Sally is one of the most recreated, most talked about scenes ever. You don't even have to be talking about movies. Women talk about that orgasm scene. If they've never even seen the movie, they know about it. That is a credit to someone's writing when someone who hasn't even seen the movie knows the scene. Just incredible.
Exactly, exactly. Number four for me goes to the guy who likes to dance, the guy who likes to choke people out in his films, the guy who's a little weird but also a genius at the same time.
Sure.
Let's be honest about it. The one, the only, Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
No one could ever recreate his type of films. I mean, you know a Tarantino film when you watch it. I mean, come on, Pulp Fiction, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Reservoir Dogs, so many freaking more. I've never seen any of the Kill Bills. They are on my list. So I'm very interested in that dynamic because it's so story driven. Most of his things, they're so story driven that lead up to just an overwhelming amount of action, gore, intensity. And I feel like nobody else can even compete with what he does in Hollywood. Is he a little weird? Does he have a feet fetish? Yes, but he is a great freaking writer, man. I will say that. There's only one Quentin Tarantino, and that's really all I need to say.
Yeah, no. So I want to just give an honorable mention, since you brought up Quentin Tarantino, to Little Quentin, otherwise known as Danny Strong, who is not on the list, but because I wanted to kind of balance between men and women, but definitely one of both of our favorite writers. I mean, this man, did you know that he wrote some of the Hunger Games movies, guys? Bet you didn't know that, but he did. He's also got a great film directorial debut that he wrote, Rebel in the Rye, about Catcher in the Rye and John Salinger, J.D. Salinger. It's just, he's a phenomenal writer. Some of the best shows on television. This Dope Sick, enough said. Dope Sick. Danny Strong, by far one of our favorite writers as well. My number four seems like it would be an obvious, right? I mean, this guy but you think of him more as a director, but he's also a writer, guys. I'm talking about Francis Ford Coppola. Yes. Did you know, you hear Mario Puzo, but did you know that he also co-wrote The Godfather with Mario Puzo? Yeah, all the drastic changes from Mario Puzo's script were done by Francis Ford Coppola. They worked together, like, hey, how about this? How about this? How about this? Yes. Okay, so everybody knows The Godfather, right? Did you know that he wrote Apocalypse Now, one of the most famous war movies of all time? Another famous war movie that he wrote, did you happen to know? My Relative, Patton, Francis Ford Coppola. And there's a ton more, guys. This guy's writing, if you go and look, you'd be like, what? That was Francis Ford Coppola? What? Yeah, he's a phenomenal writer as well as a phenomenal director. I would highly recommend you go check out his work, his list of work, and you're going to be shocked at some of the movies. I knew some of these, and other ones I was like, wait, what? He wrote that? Like, I'll be honest, I was shocked by Apocalypse Now. No fucking clue that was Francis Ford Coppola. One of the best movies. It's one of my favorite movies, and I didn't even know it was him that wrote it. Like, what? But yeah, just dude, Francis Ford Coppola. Killing it. My man is killing it.
So good. So good. I literally thought about going back and watching The Making of The Godfather or whatever that show is.
Yeah.
So damn good. Miles.
Yeah. Taylor. Oh, The Offer. And yeah.
The Offer. Yeah. It's so good, guys. If you haven't checked that out on Paramount Plus, please do yourself a favor and do so.
And check out our interview with the casting director of that, John Papsidera, because he talks about like casting that show, which was so fucking brilliant. The people that he cast in that show was just like amazing. So the guy he got to play Francis Ford Coppola was like freaking amazing. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's a great show, The Offer, man.
It's so good. So good. Well, number three for me goes to Mr. New York himself. Oh my goodness. I'm talking about the one and only Spike Lee. If you haven't seen any of the Spike Lee joints, please, please, please do so. I mean, Malcolm X, you have Black Klansman, and He's Got Game, and so many freaking others. Do the Right Thing. I just feel like on the level that he is creating films, and on the level that he is giving a voice to specifically the Black community, it's untouched. You know, I mean, Ryan Coogler is doing the same thing now. But of course, he followed in the footsteps of Spike Lee. And I just feel like what he is able to do with his films, not only with his writing, with his acting sometimes, because he does star and cameo in a lot of his films.
For sure.
It's absolutely amazing, because he is an original storyteller. You will never see or hear about Spike Lee creating a reboot, a revision, or any of that shit. And that's why I hold him at such a high regard, because I have so much respect for somebody who continues to put out these type of projects and this type of work that comes from his own mind and inspired by other people that are in his life or who have been in his life past. But yeah, man, I mean, Spike Lee films are completely different. It's kind of like Tarantino in that regard. You can always tell when it's a Spike Lee joint.
Oh, and, for sure.
I mean, had to put it on the list. Had
yeah,
to.
Had
Number
to.
Three for me, Spike Lee.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. In fact, I would put money on it that Ryan Coogler would tell you that Spike Lee wholeheartedly is the reason he is a filmmaker and able to do what he does. And I mean, I have no doubt that that's the case. He's inspired so many young African-American men and women to like become creators and become, you know, you can get this done. You can. Yeah. Yeah. Just a brilliant choice right there. Brilliant choice. My number three is a pair of brothers that you might be familiar with, but what I want to do is try to get away from what the only thing that everybody always brings them up for, which is the Dark Knight trilogy. As brilliant as the Dark Knight trilogy is, everything these two have written together equally as brilliant, maybe more so. In fact, the recent one, Oppenheimer, maybe the greatest single film ever made. Maybe. Mm-hmm. It's up there. It's in the conversation. It has to be in the conversation. I'm, of course, talking about Christopher and Jonathan Nolan. Oppenheimer, Inception, The Prestige, Dunkirk. Like, all these, like, just incredible movies. That Memento, that these two guys have written together. They're intelligent. They're thought-provoking. They make you question what you're watching. They're like, those are kind of the filmmakers that I love. They are true filmmakers, true writers. They love dialogue. They love making you go, wait, what? And I just, anybody who can do that, anybody that can make you think and tell a story in the way that these two guys tell a story, it's just freaking amazing. Christopher and Jonathan Nolan. I mean, I would beg anybody out there, I would say, find a Christopher and Jonathan Nolan film that you don't like. I don't think you can. I honestly don't think you can. They're all great. Have they all gotten the recognition that they deserve? No. Some of them are lesser known. Some of them you're like, wait, I'm not sure I heard that one, whatever. But they're all, if you go back and watch them, they're all fucking brilliant. They're all brilliant. And they're all different. That's what I like. They're all so drastically different. Prestige, nothing like Oppenheimer. Obviously, Inception, nothing like The Dark Knight. They're all so drastic. And Memento, not even like anything. So it's just, yeah, I love these guys, man. I love them. Christopher and Jonathan Nolan, my number three.
I love it, man. I love it. And I mean, this next one, you and I both love, because this man ruled the 80s and early 90s. Literally.
Literally.
So many classics that go down in history as so many people's favorite films. I'm talking about the legendary, the one and only, rest in peace, John Hughes. Mm. This man was absolutely amazing at screenwriting. I mean, you know the name, you know Breakfast Club, you know Home Alone, you know Uncle Buck, Pretty in Pink. The list goes on and on and on. But this guy, I just felt like, was such a genuine human being and brought that to his writing and to his films, to the point where everybody felt like they could connect with his characters.
For sure.
Everybody felt like those are the definition of family films, of teenage angst, of, you know, just trying to be the best version of yourself that you can be. I mean, there's so many words that you could describe John Hughes as. But his films are unlike anything else. They're warm. They're Christmas morning wrapped up in a warm blanket. Like, it's one of those things where you're just like, if they feel so homey that, like, there's no other feeling like it when you're watching his film. So number two for me, John Hughes.
I mean, I cannot agree more. I mean, as someone who was a teenager in the 80s, right? Not just a teenager, started at 10. Okay. I'm not that old, but, dude, like, if you came up in that time, and even now, The Breakfast Club is like a rite of passage for a teenager. There, yeah. You will identify with one of those five characters because that's you. That is you as a teenager, whether it was the jock, whether it was the nerd, whether it was the pretty girl, whether it was the stoner, you are one of those people. And I just feel like it's got to be one of the single greatest films as a family drama, but also rite of passage film for teenagers. Like for me, it's a must see. If you have a kid at some point, you have to sit them down and tell them to watch this film. Because it's that good, and it's that, I think, instrumental in your transition from child to adult. Like, this is it. This is your transition film. Like, you know. And you know what else I think that film does really well? It shows us that, and we talk about this a lot now, mental health and everything. It's okay to not be okay. All of those kids were having some fucked up days, and they were having some fucked up shit with their families, and they were all going through some stuff, yet they all bonded. And when they realized that they were all in it together and not alone, and that they weren't the only one facing something, they come out of it the way they come out of it. And I just think it's a brilliant fit. It addresses everything like that, mental health and struggles and family life and hard enough being a teenager and the pressures that you have on becoming an adult and like all the kind of stuff. It's just, yeah, brilliant choice, man. Brilliant choice. My number two is the only writer that I think is as equally brilliant with dialogue as our number one. And I say our number one because our number one is the same. But this woman is his equal, without doubt. This woman, there is nobody better. In fact, she is his superior when it comes to writing fast-paced dialogue. There is not a person on this planet as a writer that can match this woman in nonstop conversation that takes place referencing pop culture at speeds unheard of. I am talking about Amy Sherman-Palladino. And all you have to do is watch Gilmore Girls to know what I'm talking about. Gilmore Girls, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Bunheads, any of those, unbelievable. This woman can write dialogue like no one I have seen, and the way she spins the pop culture, the speed at which these actors have to pull off these references and these conversations, and it's comedic, it's dramatic, it's sad, it's funny, it's powerful, it's it gets you angry, it makes you fall in love. It's absolutely a brilliant piece of writing. Every single episode that this woman has ever touched, her and her husband, because I know Daniel Palladino writes a lot with her, but it's just like, talk about the epitome of a writer that knows how to get you to connect to a character. I mean, Gilmore Girls, they've got to be the most beloved mom and daughter on the face of the planet ever. There's not a single person, even if you haven't watched the show, that doesn't know who they are. Like, it's one of those things. It's like, again, it's one of those, you are somebody in that show. You're a Luke. You know, you're a Jess. You're a Logan. You're a Rory. You're a Lorelai. You're Emily. You're Richard. You're somebody in that show that you can connect with. And it is the most eclectic, odd group of people, but they're all amazing. And I just think when you can write like that, especially ensembles, because it's not easy to write ensembles like that, because you have to give equal attention to all of the characters. And sometimes the backstories of other characters, of supporting characters, the way she's able to seamlessly write all of them as juicy as the main ones. Like, you just, even Babette and like all the people, all the supporting characters are just as juicy as and fun as the main characters. And it's just, she's phenomenal. Amy Sherman-Palladino. How is this woman like not got just like gazillions of Emmys and Oscars? I just do not know that she should. And so should everybody who's ever uttered her words of dialogue, because it's amazing. Yeah. Amy Sherman-Palladino, my number one. Number two.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, I mean, leading into our number one, I mean, there's no one who inspires me more, and I'm sure you feel the same way, inspires us more than the one and only Aaron fucking Sorkin.
Oh my God.
This guy, everything. everything. Doesn't matter if it's a political drama, a movie about baseball, a movie about freaking war defense. Oh, this guy is absolutely amazing. I mean, a few of my notable mentions, of course, West Wing, Moneyball, A Few Good Men. It's hard to not be motivated as a creator to get up and freaking write something after watching anything that he does, right?
Oh, absolutely. And some of mine, Sports Night, The Newsroom, The Social Network. This guy, there's not a single writer on the face of the planet that can match this man in writing dialogue. In every show or movie that this man has done, there is a monologue that cannot be touched, period. They will, like, whether you're watching The Newsroom, whether you're watching West Wing, whether it's Social Network, all of them, there is a monologue at some point that you're like, I can't fucking touch that. That is the most brilliant thing ever written, and I'm not even going to go there. I'm not even going to try. Mushroom-induced? He admits it? Can't write shit without him? I don't care. Give the man as many mushrooms as he needs because he's fucking brilliant. He is the sole reason why dialogue-driven films work. This man just, when you can open a film with an 8.5 minute long scene where it's literally just two people talking for 8.5 minutes straight, and you never once lose attention. You never once go, this feels like it's taken forever. No, that is pure brilliance. It's the same as the Code Red scene on The Stand. It's the opening sequence on The Newsroom. It's just the West Wing literally created the whole walking, like on Gilmore Girls or any show that you walk where they're having these long conversations and they're walking through. It's because of Aaron Sorkin. They created that because they're like, there's no way we can pull off all this dialogue with them just standing in the same location. And so they literally created this thing for how you could pull off dialogue like that. And then he proved them all wrong because he did Social Network and it's literally just two people at a table at a restaurant talking for 8.5 minutes. They weren't walking anywhere. They're like, let me show you it can do this. It was fucking brilliant. I think he almost wrote that scene just to fucking prove that it could work. But yeah, wow. Aaron Sorkin. I mean, when I first saw this category come up for this week's show, I was like, we're going to have the same number one. There's no way we're not going to have the same number one. It was just, we talk about him all the time. We try to model what we're doing with our series after him. Not copy, but he certainly to emulate, to try to achieve that, right? I mean, what can you say? I could literally do an entire 2-hour show talking about this man. He's fucking brilliant. Yeah.
And it's so funny too, because I saw the rundown when we were first starting it, and I saw that our producer Jason put in there, I know Aaron Sorkin's going to be on both of your lists.
I think he'd be on anybody's top 5 writers list. I mean, how could he not? Yeah, it's just
exactly.
Yeah. In fact, all so I think any writer who's ever won an Emmy or an Academy Award or whatever would say that he probably inspired them at some point. I mean, if you came after Aaron Sorkin inspired you. That's all I'm going to say. And if you say I'd say you're full of shit. There's no way you're a writer that was born after Aaron Sorkin that isn't inspired by Aaron Sorkin. It's just not possible.
Exactly. Well, we want to know, what is your favorite screenwriter?
Yes.
Please be sure to comment below or add us on Twitter, X, as they like to call it now. Or if you don't know who your favorite screenwriter is, what's your favorite movie? And then go into IMDb or IMDb Pro and look up who wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
So then that would in turn be your favorite screenwriter. But yeah, we love the fan interaction. It's all about the back and forth. We love getting to hear other people's thoughts and opinions. It's really fun. Going over to the box office recap. Five Nights at Freddy's still came in at number one with $19 million, which is crazy surprising because it being on Peacock as well.
Right.
So kudos to them. I mean, it shows that it's a pretty decent film. Number two was Taylor Swift's The Eras Tour with 13.6. Number three was Killers of the Flower Moon with 6.9. Number four was Priscilla with 5.1. And number five was Radical with 2.7.
Yes. Now, Five Nights at Freddy's is a perfect example of what I was talking about how we build things up to tear them down. Five Nights at Freddy's a couple weekends ago opened with less money than what the Marvels is getting ready to open up with. And they deemed it like the greatest thing ever. It's a huge success. It's so awesome. It's this record breaker, that record breaker. Ah! And yet it's not going to make as much as the Marvels. Yep. Which it's one of those examples where we can make you think anything we want. This is the greatest thing ever or the worst thing ever based on how we say it. And I think that the trades need to do a better job of not doing that. Let people see it first before you bash it or praise it. Like, that's all I'm saying. Let people see it.
Exactly. Exactly. New movie that is out right now, of course, The Marvels. Like we've been talking about this whole entire show. Please be sure to go see it. It is a great film.
Yes.
It is very entertaining. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your kids, bring your cat.
It's not a cat.
It's not a cat. It's not a cat. But movies you can still go see, all the ones that I listed above. And of course, The Exorcist Believer, Paw Patrol, A Mighty Movie, After Death, What Happens Later, and Freelance.
Sure.
Select theaters near you. Now, of course, going over to IMDb Pro's top trending segment. Of course, the top trending movie is still Five Nights at Freddy's. The top trending TV show is The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yep.
And now, finally, it takes a couple weeks to update, apparently, but the top trending star is Matthew Perry after his passing, which you guys know our opinions about that, but we are surprised that it didn't take it longer to get there.
We've seen celebrities that died that got on the list very next time, and that took a little longer than it needed to.
Agreed. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for getting crazy with us on episode 241. We're so excited to be back doing what we love to do, and that is being filmmakers and storytellers.
Yes.
No, get me wrong. We love the podcast. We love talking about entertainment news, but our true passion is filmmaking, screenwriting, being behind a camera, and telling a story. That is what we were put on this earth to do, and we are so excited to be back in action. Getting back to it, we will never forget about you, John Hughes. I was waiting to do that earlier, but then I forgot. But then I wanted to reinterpret it. Yes, that's great. Of course, be sure to follow the company and podcast on social media at ItCaf Podcast and at Crazy Ant Media. And of course, be sure to follow us both personally on social media, myself at J Logan Austin and
at Crazy Ant CEO.
That's right. And you guys know you can subscribe to this podcast anywhere you listen to your podcast: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Stitcher, and so much more. And of course, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, ring the bell, all the freaking good things. And of course, be sure to visit our website, www.crazyantmedia.com, where again, start rocking that Crazy Ant Media gear. I mean, prices are very wide-ranging. They don't have to be the most expensive thing. They don't have to be the cheapest thing.
No.
We have something for everybody. Everything is very reasonable price. We have merchandise for anyone and everyone. So be sure to check it out. It is definitely worth it. Get your Thanksgiving gear now, and Christmas gear comes on Black Friday.
Yes.
But yes, I'm just so happy that we are finally at this point. Hopefully, we are able to push past this point to where we can get back to work and we don't go back into a strike. But I'm just super, super thrilled. And I'm also glad we got to do like a little is it worth it thing at the very end so we could talk about our appreciation of the Marvels, because it is good.
It is. It is. And yeah, dude, I am just 2024 is going to be amazing. I am so pumped now for the beginning of the year where we can get back behind the cameras and shoot a couple of our projects and maybe sell one of our series. And just like, I think it's going to be a really good year. And while I hated the last 7 months, everything happens for a reason. We are strong believers in everything happens for a reason. And maybe it is just to kick off 2024 with just, who knows, just amazingness. It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun. And yeah, I love it. Is it worth it? The Marvels. It is worth it. Go see it. And you know what else? Before we just wrap this show up, I just want to say, Ohio State, with or without Harbaugh, we're coming for you. We're coming for you, bitches. We're going to make it another one. Just saying, go blue.
goodness. Oh, goodness.
I got to say it, man. Free Harbaugh. Free Harbaugh. Oh,
well, anyway, guys, everybody knows we love the one, the only
Oprah.